Hey, this is Dave Coryell. Welcome to this episode of Reboot IT, where I am fortunate enough to have a great guest, an IT director, and we're going to talk about what that means, an IT director's role, an IT director's career path development, and get some advice from a seasoned pro.
It's Reboot IT, the association and nonprofit technology podcast, brought to you by Delcor. And now your host, Delcor President, and a guy who's been around long enough to remember when MTV played music videos, Dave Coryell.
Today, I have Adam Kuhn joining me, who's the IT Director for the Future Industries Association, FIA. Their mission is to support open, transparent, and competitive markets, protect and enhance the integrity of the financial system, and promote high standards of professional conduct. So, like I said in the intro, I'm super excited to have Adam here today. I've known Adam quite some time, but not my entire association community career. And Adam has been with both the for-profit side and the nonprofit side of the community. What's the pedigree? Can you name the nonprofit you've been with since I've known you?
My first association job, we actually met one time during my engagement there, and that was at the Edison Electric Institute.
Oh, right, right.
That was my first association job. I was in night school, University of Maryland Business School, with a young fellow named Dave Coryell, who I didn't know, but we were in the same class.
That's right.
And I was a LAN analyst at EEI, and I was having an awful time figuring out how to manage all the loaner laptops that we had that were, I don't know, running Windows 98. I called you guys in, and you and George Breeden showed up at 701 Pennsylvania Avenue, and we talked about laptops. And, you know, 10 years later, you know, we met again or whatever it was. But that was my first association and IT job that wasn't in a sales capacity.
So that was Edison Electric, and then you also were at FMI, right?
Right, but through as a Delcor consultant.
Right, right.
So I worked for you guys.
Right.
Then I had about a year with a government contractor. Then I came back into the association world with American Public Power Association.
And, I remember that.
Yep. And then I worked for Hartman Executive Advisors as a fractional CIO / fractional IT director. Which is very much in the same space as Delcor. And then I pivoted back to the association side. So, as one friend said, I was on the partner side, and now I'm back on the association side with the Futures Industries Association, or FIA for short.
Great. So, on the nonprofit side, really, it comes to Edison Electric, American Public Power, and then... Yeah. Now FIA.
Right.
Perfect.
Right.
Well, the reason I wanted to talk to you was, A, I always enjoy talking to you, and B, when the thread started on Collaborate that you were a contributor in about the role of an IT director, you were shelling out some wise sage advice, you know, from all the roles that you've played. And you said, like you said earlier, you've played the role of a fractional CIO before too. So you've got a really good broad view of the difference in the roles and where they fit into different sizes and types of associations and so on. Mm-hmm. So that might be a really good place to start, because there's always confusion. Not always. There's often confusion about IT director versus network engineer versus CIO and CTO, and when you need which type. So how do you define the most common characteristics of an IT director?
I think an IT director usually lies with a mid to smaller size association or nonprofit, because the bigger ones, the lead IT person will probably have that CIO title. And so FIA, which has about 70 people worldwide, actually upgraded the position from IT manager to IT director when I came on board, because they wanted to make it more strategic. But I wasn't going to get an office in the C-suite where I got to ponder strategy all day. So I think the many things that lie with an IT director are basic blocking and tackling of IT. You're going to need to know your way around technology. Even if you have some of your functions outsourced, you're still going to need to know how to partner with your partners and what they're doing. You don't need to be a VMware engineer, but can you create a VM? You don't need to be an Exchange specialist, but can you create a new mailbox in Office 365? You aren't the help desk specialist, but if that person is out sick, can you help the CEO or VP with their Surface? You're not a telecom engineer, but can you work with those vendors, the Verizons, the Comcasts, to get your space lit? Do you have what it takes to work with them? So that's some basic blocking and tackling. And that's the tactical side of being an IT director, right?
And some of that was technology skills, right? Setting up, can you spin up a VM? As opposed to some of it is relationship and being able to talk the language, right? Like, can I work with the partners and speak their language to get the requirements
because
clear?
Your partners really want you to speak that language.
Right.
And that's the difference between a vendor and a partner, right? And the other side of the IT director is that, as we like to joke, the strategery part of it, the CIO role, but you're not the CIO. But will you create a presentation on the strategic direction of technology for your organization if you get a spot in front of senior leadership? You don't have an official seat at the table, but can you present to senior leadership maybe on a quarterly basis? And have you asked for that?
Right. That question comes up a lot. How do you get a seat at the table?
Right. And you know, you're going to report to the CFO of the organization, or maybe a VP of membership, or maybe the head of HR. So what are your relationships with those people? Your CIO is an investor in the IT operations and strategy of the organization. That's the person you have to convince to spend money. And do you know how to sell your ideas, your projects, just the basic needs? I mean, you know, some IT directors have to beg, borrow, and steal just for like, no, I really do need these Office 365 licenses.
Right. It's pretty basic. You
know, right. So the IT director is both of those people. And it's funny, I go back to about 2 years ago when I was interviewing at FIA, and the guys that report to me interviewed me. And one of the people I work with said to me, it's like, I know you're all about strategy, but are you going to be willing to roll up your sleeves and help us? And I said, that's a completely legitimate question.
Right.
I said, there's three of us here. I'm not going to wear this suit every day. This is my interview suit.
Right.
The last time I wear it.
Right.
You know, I will, if I have to, I will get on my hands and knees and pull cable. I don't want to. I'm getting a little old for that, but we've all got to do it. So yes, I will be with you. And that really allayed their fears that I was going to come in and just pontificate and not roll up my sleeves.
And so, and part of it too, I'm listening, and part of it is that in an organization of, like you said, 60 to 70, or maybe even 80 full-time staff, there's an IT director, right? Then larger associations will have the CIO role, but they still need an IT director, right? I mean, there's still the IT director because, as you said, directing all that tackling and blocking is part of what the director is doing. And sometimes they have to actually tackle and block themselves, right? But you know, they're directing how it's getting done, whether it's through a partner or through other team members, is part of what they're doing. So I'm listening and I'm hearing, you know, the operations, and then there's the and part of the way I think about it is there's operations, management, and strategy. And for the IT director, it's kind of maybe 30-35% operations and 40% management, 50, and then the other, really the 15-20% left is where you get to engage in the business strategy by being the IT, the head of IT for an organization that size.
Right.
Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. And so when you talked about that dynamic of you have a CIO and an IT director in an organization, so my mind immediately jumps to say, Reggie and Larry at ASAE.
Right, right.
And so Reggie has a lot to say about the strategic technology direction about ASAE, but I will guess that Larry does too, because Reggie also is focused on the external relationships of ASAE to its members. And so he's doing a lot of technology talk with its members. And similarly, at the bigger trade associations, the CIO has that C-suite external relationship role with members. The IT director in those larger organizations probably is doing a bit of strategy as well as blocking and tackling.
Sure. And you mentioned too, the piece about, you know, working with, you know, I need Office 365 licenses, and finance has to approve that. And depends on where you report as an IT director in an organization of a certain size. But you're always working with, right, finance and other departments. So what are your thoughts on being the business partner versus being the IT dictator, you know, so to speak, in an environment? Right. How has that changed, or what's your advice on that?
So because I've had the opportunity to be a consultant, when you go back into the association world on the association side, being a consultant, that doesn't stop, right? In other words, that's how you got that higher level job, because you're bringing those consultative skills with you. So, you know, my first couple of weeks at an association, I'm reaching out to HR and I'm saying, hey, how can I help you with onboarding and offboarding? How can we help you with all of the documents that you need to have signed? You know, have you considered a DocuSign type thing? Mm-hmm. And they're like, we've always wanted that. And so, you know, well, I can't necessarily do all that work for you, but I'd like to help you come to pick a vendor and do all that work. And then I'll help you find someone to get that set up for you. And when I do that as a new IT director, I can hear the angels singing for my customer, who is that HR director, because they've never had that before. I'll go to my CFO and say, so how are we on business continuity? What happens if we have a 5-day snowstorm? Do you have a lockbox set up? You know, how can we make sure that we can all work from home? Ah, we're never going to need from home.
And look where we are. I'm in my basement.
Right. So, and then membership, you know, which usually is where the association management system lies, or CRM, customer relationship management system. Hi, you know, I've worked with AMSs. I've helped organizations pick them. How can I help you with your Salesforce, Nimble, Aptify, your membership, Fontiva, whatever it is? How can I help you with that? Really? You'd help us with that?
Right.
Because no one else has ever offered that before.
And there,
I'm happy to.
Yeah. And there's the difference between, like, you started that thread with HR, for example. How can I help you onboard? And so there's the one, again, kind of back to operations and management and strategy differentials, is mm-hmm. operation help might be, I'm going to make sure my part of when somebody new comes in gets done effectively, right? We're going to have a device for them. We're going to onboard them so that they can, you know, whatever the policies are for email on your phone or whatever, all that tactical stuff will get done. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right now we're sending faxes back and forth, or we're, you know, and maybe there's a use for technology where you're really playing that consultative role, like you said, to help the organization see where technology can alleviate some of their pain points. And I imagine, as you know, a small department in a mid-sized association, that's an incredibly important skill and role to play as an IT director.
I think it is. I think it increases your value in the organization. It helps create those positive relationships with the different departments. And also, there's some give and take. So, like, if I help you guys do this stuff better, do you think you could give us more than 2 hours notice when you hire someone?
Right. 2 hours? You're getting 2 hours? Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, you're looking to build those relationships and also let them know it's really helpful if you have a little time to, you know, to to hire someone or deal with a with an offboarding.
Right. And so I'm seeing that as one of the, when I'm listening to you and I'm seeing that as one of the key pieces of advice, really, which is if you're new to being an IT director, or, you know, if you're an IT director and your version of success is based on uptime or system availability or whatever, you're missing an entire component of your value prop, your value to the organization, and right. really your engagement with the organization.
Right. And so that would be, in the order of things, that would be more of an IT manager's role.
Gotcha.
Or an Exchange admin, right? Back when we had Exchange administrators, you know, what's your measure of success? How the uptime of the Exchange server?
Yeah, yeah. And there's
reachability.
Right. And there's certainly, and this goes back to kind of career paths and stuff too. If you come from the technical background, you value the technical stuff. If you come right. from a managerial background, you know, you form those relationships. So it's just important to be able to do it. You know, sending out an email saying, you know, our systems are working really doesn't demonstrate the value to the organization. Right. And you have an additional layer, potentially, I guess. I don't know that it's a layer of complication that you also have offices in London and Singapore.
Right.
So I don't know how big they are, but I imagine there's certainly things you have to get done for them, and there are probably challenges associated with that.
It's interesting. So I can think of a I'll try and make it a short story to talk about how I approached the London office. So we have an office in DC of approximately 40 people. We're literally in the middle of a corporate move, two blocks from, you know, one office to another. So, you know, earlier today I was wrestling with a phone vendor about getting SIP trunks for a meeting room. In London, we have an office of about 18 people-ish. And there was a pre-existing relationship with our London office with a managed service provider, or MSP, in London. You know, or as I like to say, our Delcor in London.
All right.
And but I was told, like, my first week, oh, Adam, you're gonna have to let go of those guys. They're just not very good. And I'm saying, well, why is that? Blah, 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 blah. You know, all these different reasons. And I'm like, I said, you know, I have found in my career that it is much less expensive to rehabilitate a relationship than to terminate one and start a new one. So why don't you let me see what I can do? And so we started with weekly meetings with this MSP. And as I peeled back the layers of the onion, I had discovered that their hands were tied for a variety of reasons, not their fault. And I started to unshackle their hands. And there's that word again. We developed a relationship and the service improved. And at some point after a trip to London, back when we could do that, I went over there, I rolled up my sleeves, I worked with the MSP over there, and we did a lot of work in the London office. And I came back and the CEO said, you know, here, it went really well there. Well, what's the deal? How did you fix that? And I said, weekly phone calls. He's like, really? I said, yep.
Right. More communication. Good communication.
Yeah. And the phone calls get shorter and shorter each week because you start knocking off problems to the point where, oh, let's make it every other week. How's everything good? How many calls, you know? And the number of calls started to go down because we started to fix some of the underlying issues. Now, the only danger of that is when your CFO looks at the bill for that MSP in London and says, well, gee, everything's working. Why are we still paying them?
Right, right.
Like, would you like that to continue?
That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
When IT becomes invisible.
Engine room will continue to work for a short period of time, but someone has to shovel the coal.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I just made it up. So being in IT is like being a constant analogist.
It's always good to have an analogy ready to fire.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking of something before the call that I wanted to get out there. My today's viewpoint on what's the hardest thing about being an IT director. And I think as of today, and I can remember in previous times, it's getting multiple vendors to work together and at least be aware of the needs of the other vendors and ultimately the customer, which is you, right?
Right, right.
So you two vendors, you're on two sides of a project. You need to know what each other needs, and there needs to be good communication between you, and ultimately that needs to be towards a successful completion of a project that you're working on. And that is just the hardest thing. It's management of time and space. You know, just for instance, you know, on a, let's say in a telecommunications issue where you have an internet line in and something's not working right. So you have your, maybe you have an outside outsourced consultant working for you because you're not an engineer. You're good with technology, but you're not a router switch guy, you know, really.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
So you have your router switch guy, you know, and then you've got your Comcast person on the phone, and you've got a CenturyLink person on the phone, and you've got a phone broker. Just the energy to get all those people on the phone at the same time and have your engineer down in your server room plugged in to get that all happen is something that will keep you at night, up at night, worrying about whether you can pull it off the next day. And then pulling it off and actually coming to a conclusion to solve the problem is like, oh, I see this is configured wrongly. I'm going to change this. Hey, it's green. Whoa! You know, and everybody on the phone goes, yes. Okay. That's, you know, you're counting the minutes and the hours because you're paying for time of some of these people. And that's just hard. It's still hard. And it's going to still be hard 1 year and 2 years from now.
So, yeah. I wonder why that is, you know, why it's so hard.
It's not, I mean, there's a hint of facetiousness in your voice, maybe not intentionally, not intentionally, but it is because it is. And it's not because any one of those parties is aggressively trying to do something wrong.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
It's because each one of those parties has a piece of the elephant, but they only see the ear or the trunk or the tail, but it's hard for them to see the whole elephant. And you, as the director of IT, is the person saying, guys, there's a big animal and you only have these parts. Step back and see the whole thing. And then let's all come together to fix it. That's hard. I mean, it just is.
Yeah, it is. And part of it is, I think all the partners have multiple projects, right? Multiple priorities. And they know they have their work plan for getting their work done related to your project. And in the work plan, there's not necessarily a connect with partner B and have a thorough discussion about, you know, the elements of a RACI matrix between the two of them, or, you know, how this comes together for the client.
And you as a client, like, we're 70 people worldwide. That's in the world of associations, that's actually in the larger spectrum.
Yeah.
Right?
You're a large, mid-size, or a small, large association. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of like a Mini Cooper. So, but in the world of their customers, you are an infinitesimal speck of dust, you know?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, I agree. It can be that way.
So it's like, pay attention to us. We're small, but we'd love it if you could treat us just as importantly as your big customer.
And that really, though, that should be, that's why I was kind of hesitating on that, because really, if you accept a project as a partner, if you accept a project, you can't say, I accepted it, but I'm not going to pay as much attention to it as others, right?
I agreed. I think that was a little bit of insecurity on my part.
Oh,
expressing it that way.
Yeah. No, I get that. Because we hire, you know, at Delcor, we hire outsiders to do stuff, right? And not IT, but other things for us. And I feel like sometimes we've, whether it's our digital presence and we've had partners in that area or whatever it is, where I think, I wonder who their big clients are that are probably getting more attention than we do. It's just natural. I get that. So earlier you mentioned you are moving like two blocks, I think you said?
Two blocks.
Right. And so I imagine as the IT director, you've got resources involved in the setup and moving into the new office. But at the same time, are you returning to your office? You know, are you taking what's going on right now into account and redesigning your plan for how the office will work once we're there again.
Right. So there's a lot to unpack in that question, because there's the, on the one hand, you have the move.
Right.
And on the other hand, you have the question, the existential question of what does work look like in the next year in relation to your office. So I'll try and tackle it two different ways. The physical, as an IT director of any organization, a move from one office to another is a big thing. And it's stressful and it's difficult. And in the time of COVID, everything got delayed. And so there were a lot of phone calls to internet service providers saying, you know, when I told you to disconnect,
right?
We're still going to be here, so don't do that,
right?
And in the meantime, you still have to get the internet into your new office. So there was a lot of double dipping. And so that move is still in play. We're still dealing with issues in the new office. In a sense, the current pandemic gives me a little bit of room to breathe, because no one is really rushing into their office to work. Again, what we're doing is we're just moving our corporate headquarters to a new location so that everybody can still work from home.
Right.
And the design of the office was too far ahead. The space, the design, everything was well in play.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it must have been.
When this happened, to the point where there was no opportunity to say, this gives us an opportunity to reimagine what our offices look like. So that ship had already sailed. And, you know, we will have a nice new work environment, whether it's going to be, you know, we're not expecting 40 people to be in the office anytime soon. I feel that the leadership of our association has been very sensitive to the staff and our concerns about health. And at this point, you know, we will have a discussion in the future about what work from the office looks like. But it is going to probably look like some kind of rotating schedule, where in an office built for 40 people, no more than 8 or 10 max are in the office at the same time.
Yeah.
And now, what does that mean for IT? Because no matter who's in the office, the expectation is that IT isn't always in the office. So there's three of us on my team. And so, you know, we might come up with a once a week plan for each of us. We'll see.
It's funny you said, it's not funny, but one of the things you just said was work from the office. Mm-hmm. Which is now kind of a, right? It used to be work from home was the,
right.
Let's all
right.
figure out how to do
Superman type
right.
thing.
Now it's work from the office is going to be the challenge, as opposed to working. And I was listening to a CIO webinar yesterday, and one of the speakers talked about that they've adopted using the term work from anywhere as opposed to work from home. And they're shifting their culture so that it's a work from anywhere culture. And he also talked about, as opposed to remote connectivity, he talks about remote productivity within his organization. So I thought those were, you know, language is important. And I thought those were kind of two interesting twists on the way that they're building their internal culture to talk about what they've learned in the last few months. So
I think with, you know, there's still ebb and flow of people coming and going to our company. And we're fortunate that, you know, that's the case. But I think, as you've noted on previous podcasts, you know, if you have a position open, that position doesn't have to be filled by someone who lives in the immediate area.
Right.
You know, that is now, you know, you can live several time zones away or whatever. You know, it's who's the best person to do the job. You know, maybe you need to be in the same country.
Right.
But maybe.
Well, it's yeah,
maybe.
And it is, you know, who would have thought 6 months ago that so many organizations, we're one of them, would have ever said, yes, I'm going to hire someone that I've never met in person. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, a real big step in terms of changing our recruitment. Everything gets changed because of that is now okay to do. And it's been successful. You know, so if, especially I imagine large organizations, I think we've hired maybe one or two. I know we've hired one, maybe we've hired two people in that mode. And imagine if you've hired 40 or 100, how you're going to have to change your organization's HR right. recruitment and onboarding and so on, and culture of hey, this actually works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Going back to blocking and tackling right. a little bit, you know, in our move, I really tried to cut down on our on-prem systems. And so we have a lot less hardware and virtual machines, but we're still designed as a kind of a traditional Microsoft shop where we have a domain controller, which we just upgraded to the latest version of Windows. But I've declared all along in that project, I said, this is the last domain controller upgrade we'll ever do. Mm-hmm. Because the next step after this is into a cloud-based directory system, probably Azure.
Right, right.
Because when you're in Office 365, you're dipping your toe into Azure anyway. So I believe that I positioned my organization for that pivot to a more pure cloud directory basis. And by doing that, you make that remote work anywhere strategy more manageable, because I've talked to other organizations in my space where they're very much into Azure. Azure has this feature called Intune, and basically you ship a computer to somebody, they log in for the first time in their home on their Wi-Fi, and everything just comes down to their machine. Mm-hmm. We are not at that point yet, but we are positioned to go to that over the next year or two. So that's a little bit of the blocking and tackling in terms of how that fits into the work anywhere environment.
Yeah, yeah. So all of the parts, and we've been around, you know, both of us have been around a long time in terms of we've seen a lot of technology change, and you're describing the next, right, what you're setting yourself up for next. Mm-hmm. And that's an intentional change you're making. Then you also probably have some the unintended consequences of the pandemic, of COVID, right? What has changed, or what have the last 4 or whatever months it's been now, totally losing track of time, what have they right. been like? What's happened with you in your organization?
So I can remember back to mid-March when we test drove a remote day on a Friday, and then that Monday we were officially
yep.
working from home.
Yep. A number of other clients had the same. Yep.
Right. So the corporate move that we talked about earlier had a lot to play with that, because as part of the corporate move, I had spent a lot of time in investment of time in meeting room technology. I've become a little bit of a fan of meeting room technology and companies like Polycom and integrating that with a platform. And so I had to make a strategic decision as to, is it going to be Zoom? Is it going to be GoToMeetings? Is it going to be Teams? And for a variety of reasons, I felt that if we're going to use Teams with Office 365, then I needed to make these huddle rooms and big meeting rooms very Teams friendly. So with the existing meeting rooms I had at my old location, which were set up at a very simple way, I learned how to leverage the existing equipment, make it Teams friendly, and then I started pushing Teams in 2019. Started doing meetings, started doing training, and then March happened, and everybody just started using Teams. Mm-hmm. And if you go into your Teams tenant in Office 365, you can get some usage reports.
Right, right.
And it just, I mean, you could visibly see it just go up, and it stays up. And not only did Teams usage go up, but inbound phone calls went way down. And so putting that effort in towards a unified communication strategy around Teams made remote work work.
Let me ask in that.
Helped remote work work.
Yeah, so you had the platform in place, you had the training and knowledge in place so that people would use it. Was there any partnering with HR in the other direction in terms of, I need help with policy, I need help with professional development, or did IT drive that?
It's a great question, and the answer is neither. We didn't really partner with HR all that much, and there wasn't any need that jumped out at us for professional development. The things that came out that a lot of IT directors and CIOs will talk about was how to help people in their homes around technology. And, you know, did they need a camera? Did they need keyboard mice? Did they need monitors? Like, you know, working on your laptop all day, that's a small screen. You know, being an IT guy, you know, I'm at home, I've got multiple monitors on my desk because what, doesn't everybody do that?
Right, right.
Turns out they don't.
Right.
So the remote work works, but we have to help people work from home. And, you know, I've just started off ordering some extra docking stations because a lot of people took their laptop docking stations home. And am I going to make them bring their docking stations back to the office so that once every 2 weeks they can come to the office? No, I'm going to put a docking station in their office. They'll keep their docking station at home and they'll just take their laptop back and forth.
Right, right.
And facilitate that. And those are investments, but they're small investments. You know, a typical monitor now is $150. A typical docking station.
Yeah, remember when they were $800?
Yeah, we're not talking about $1,000 per person, but we are saying, hey, we want to facilitate people being able to work productively from home. Let's give them these tools. Asset management, that's adorable.
That's adorable. So that was what's been going on in the last 4 months there.
Yeah. I mean, so the upside of that is we've done 5 years of Teams training in 4 months, and I've now got 70 people that are killing it on Teams, which fits right into my strategy of shedding our old hosted VoIP system and going with a Teams-based phone system. So now the thing that they use all the time, they'll now be able to dial landlines and take their calls on it, and that'll be awesome. And then we'll show them how to put the app on their mobile phone and do that. And then when that's done, we take our old-fashioned file server, you know, in our case it's the G drive, every IT director has one, just change the letter,
right,
and we'll migrate that stuff to Teams, and then the use of the VPN will be much less important. And work anywhere will really happen, and it'll happen whether you have an iPad or an Android tablet.
And that's part of our digital workplace that consulting that we do is around not only the technology piece, but what I was saying earlier, like if you're going from a G drive to SharePoint Online in many cases, or if you're going to start using file repositories in Teams, just getting the policy around it. And I'm not talking 48 pages of policy. I'm talking about, you know, what are we doing with our file shares and what are our internal rules for sharing things on our OneDrive? You know, just making sure the organization has all those both pieces in place and communication going to the team members who are trying to figure out what they're supposed to do with this file that they want to share with an external person. So
on the blocking and tackling side of things, one of the first things I learned how to do was, and this sounds very draconian, I turned off the ability for staff to create their own teams in Microsoft Teams.
Mm-hmm. And that does sound draconian, yeah.
It does, because I am Mordock, the preventer of information services. But what it allowed is just say, come to me, I'll create the team for you. But oh, look, the thing that you're asking for, did you know that someone already created that and it's down here? Oh, wow. Okay, I'll use that instead. And that's what I'm trying to prevent. As another vendor who I helped them out with how to deal with the pandemic from an IT perspective, he said, when everyone had the right to create their own teams and there was a holiday party, one person created Holiday Party 2019 team and another person created a 2019 Holiday Party team and another person created a party. It's 2019, you know, and all this Teams proliferation. And so that's why I turned that off.
Yeah. And that's why you got to have some policy around it too.
Yeah.
And education. Mm-hmm. So speaking of education, somebody coming into the, you know, someone who's 2 years in at the most of being an IT director or coming into that role from whatever, from network engineering or, you know, maybe they were in a different department and love IT and have transitioned. What advice would you give them?
I would say that learning is lifelong.
Okay.
And that you should be open to opportunities for education, even as you gain experience. And that's very tied to your career path. When you're in a learning mode and you take a course, it's just empowering to feel like you can more is possible. Whether it's just something on social emotional growth as a leader, or whether it's down and dirty blocking and tackling how to set up group policies for Active Directory. That being said, I've never been a very good test taker. So while I am respectful of certifications and encourage the younger folks who have worked for me to get them, your mileage may vary. Go for it if you love it. Find something else, or take the class but don't take the test. You know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So as a person, if you're starting out in IT in the association world, I would say it's important to not grow stale. So that could happen if you stay at a place too long and you've accomplished all your goals and you're just sitting there waiting for things to happen. You may need to try and grow your position if you have the support within the organization. But if you're topped out and you grow stale, that's not a recipe for success. So either be happy where you are and continue to try and grow, or when you start to grow stale, then it might be time to move to another organization where there are new opportunities and new challenges.
Sure. It's that old don't let the grass grow beneath your feet situation, right?
Right. And I would say, you know, learning is lifelong. So take courses, whether they're technology oriented or social emotional, whatever it is. You know, be strategic, but be willing to get your hands dirty, but also be willing to be strategic and present to your senior leadership when you have that opportunity.
It's one that you made me think of this when you were just talking, was that one of the things I think IT directors would struggle with the most, because I remember when I went from, you know, I was a certified network engineer and I used to write a lot of code, and I had to stop doing those things in order to become a management person. Like when we did our MBA, right? I wanted a management aspect of it. And you can't keep up both. You can't. And so you have to be willing to let go of, I no longer know how to set up a VM, or I no longer know how to
right.
You know, do certain things. So I think an IT director is that role that becomes that pivotal moment where, what tech skills am I going to let go of?
Right. So you still have to retain some of them, but I never go so far as to say I'm an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
But I can hop onto something in a pinch and troubleshoot it. It may take me longer, but that's, if it's not an emergency situation, that's an opportunity for growth and you've learned something at the end of the day. But if it's a big thing, you know, then it's time to bring in some help.
Yeah. Yep. Help is always there.
Yep. You know, what do you say if you're retiring and someone's coming in to replace you? And the answer is, I've left everything perfect for you. There's nothing.
That's the way to go out. Everything's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I believe might be the case. So, you know, I think there was a lot in there, right? Anyone who's listening can unpack a lot of advice that just came out of that conversation about how to be a really good IT director and what it means to be an IT director versus a different role within the organization. So thank you. Thank you for spending the time doing this. And thank you for the input you give to the community too. You're one of the very valuable contributors to Collaborate on ASA's, you know, social platform. So we all appreciate your wisdom that comes out and the questions that you ask sometimes on that as well.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure and a great opportunity to be here and participate in this.
Even though someday we can actually see each other and have a beer.
I'm looking forward to that.
Not even though, that's the wrong. I look forward to the day that we can get together actually and see each other at a conference and grab a beer and catch up as well.
As do I.
All right, perfect. Thanks. So that was awesome, in my opinion. I really enjoyed catching up with Adam and hearing his perspective, because like he's, as you may have caught on, he's had a lot of different roles within this community. and worked both for us and other companies that give him a really broad perspective on the association IT positions. And I hope you pulled as much as advice out of it as I did. Probably one of the biggest things that I thought he shared was that an IT director is technical, but that's really not their value proposition to their team members or their organization. It's really playing that role as an IT director, depending on the size of your organization, that also has that consultative perspective and provides input into aligning IT with the business objectives and the mission of the organization, which I know Adam does so well. So again, I hope you enjoyed as much as I did, and hopefully we rebooted your thinking about what a role of an IT director is. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us on Reboot IT. If you like what you heard, please subscribe on your favorite podcast directory and leave us a 5-star review while you're there. Reach out to us via our website at delcor.com or on one of our social media channels. We'll see you next time.